This is Big Talk. Michael Glab here, my guest this week in the studio. Someone just like me. In fact, our work sort of overlaps each other. Jeremy Scheer. Jeremy, thanks for being on the show.
Great. Thanks for having me.
One of the big acronyms going around, FOMO.
FOMO.
Fear of missing out.
Right.
Nobody's going to do that if they go to B-Town Lowdown.
Right.
Which... you're the founder and the co-host of that podcast.
Yes, correct.
Now, you can get that right at the B-Town Lowdown website, btownlowdown.com. You can also get it on iTunes and other platforms as well.
Yeah, you can get it anywhere you get podcasts. So any podcast app, you just search for B-Town. Usually it comes up with just B-Town, but you could also type in Lowdown. It'll come up.
B-Town Lowdown tells us... what the heck's going on in this city?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Like what? What's going on this week?
Okay, so for example, in our current episode, I interviewed somebody named Kel McBride. She goes by the Lively Death Lady.
And Lively Death, as in end of life, yes.
Yeah, as in end of life, right. The Lively Death Lady. And I did an interview with her. So we have... We go over the week's events, and we also have a featured interview, and she's the featured interview this week in this episode.
Uh-huh.
And she has organized the Before I Die Festival,
right,
which has all kinds of events going on this week and in the coming weeks all the way into the middle of November. So, for example, one of their events is called Death Cafe, and it is literally people getting together at a cafe at Blooming Foods East and talking about death and dying in a kind of free-form fashion. So that's one event that's happening. There's also Spamalot at the IU Auditorium. That's happening. There's so much going on in Bloomington that we only talk about some of it on the podcast because we don't want it to go too long. There's so much going on that we can only really cover kind of a fraction. The reason I started the podcast in the first place is because I've lived in Bloomington for more than 20 years, came here as a grad student, ended up staying, been here a long time, and I realized a couple years ago, I never really know what's going on. I'll hear about some things, but then I was constantly hearing from friends, oh, did you go to such and such? No, I didn't know about it. Did you check out that thing? No, I didn't even know that existed, you know? And I just thought, okay, why am I missing out on all this stuff? And I thought, well, it's because there's so much of it, and I'm just not sure where to go to find out about it. And I knew there were community calendars and the like, which are great. You know, they're very informative. But I'm also really into podcasts, and I'm a podcast producer. And I kept thinking somebody should do a podcast for Bloomington because there's enough going on, and it's just a cool town, and podcasts have become kind of a big thing. So I kept thinking somebody should do a podcast. And then I finally realized I should do a podcast. I'm the guy. I should do it because I know how to do it. I have the experience. I have a studio at home. And so about 3 months ago, I just started putting it together, and now it exists.
I noticed that your first podcast was dated August 5th.
Right.
Some examples of guests and shows, as you say, Kel McBride, the Lively Death Lady. You had a show called Scootergeddon.
Right.
You had Adrian Nassim.
Yeah. You've talked to Adrian Nassim on this show.
Absolutely. Yeah. You've had Sarah Perfetti, another guest on this show.
That's right.
Like I say, we sort of overlap.
We do.
We should be arm wrestling here or something.
Right.
You've had Alexi King and Rachel Glago from the Midwest Music Festival.
Right, they were great.
You've had Janae Cummings from Bloomington Pride.
Yeah.
You get around.
Well, there's a lot of cool people in Bloomington, and I want to have them on the podcast.
Now, you say you had a studio at your home. Why did you have a studio? Not everybody has a studio at their home.
Right, right. Well, I have a home studio. I built it primarily for recording music, because I'm a musician and a songwriter, and which I do really mainly just for fun. But I've been in bands around town. And, you know, over the past 10, 15 years, home recording technology has gotten really good and pretty cheap. And I've always been into that stuff going back years. And I just started investing in some equipment and teaching myself how to use it. And I got more and more into it. And before too long, I had pretty much everything you need to build a home recording studio. And also, you know, for about a decade, I was a producer for a radio show called Sound Medicine, which was produced up in Indy, but I was working remotely from home, and so I needed to be able to record and edit and stuff like that. So that also gave me impetus to build a studio. Well, my claim to fame there, in case people are interested, and this was a one-off thing, but I did write a song that ended up in a Disney movie.
Get out of here.
No, I'm not kidding. It's a real thing. So the movie is called Prom, like as in senior prom. So that's a movie that came out in 2011. And the director is a friend of mine, so I definitely had kind of a foot in the door. It was a kind of movie where they wanted a lot of original music. And he invited me to write something and submit it with no guarantees. Right. But he sent me the script, and I read it. And I sat at my kitchen table and wrote a song, like a very simple song, recorded a little demo, sent it off to him, and he really liked it. And he was like, okay, I'll submit this. You know, it'll be in the pool of songs. And so many months go by. And then one day I hear from him and he's like, yeah, your song's in the movie. And I was just like, wow, that's cool. And I assumed that, you know, they would re-record it with like some Disney, you know, pop princess or something, but they didn't. They just sort of used, they re-recorded some parts of it, but it's my voice in the song, in the movie. I was pretty surprised.
You're a songwriter, as you say. You're a podcast host. You've written a lot of articles. For a while, you specialized in sort of a science thing,
yeah,
with a little even deeper specialization in energy.
Yeah.
You're the author of a 2013 book published by St. Martin's Press, Renewable, A Reporter's Quest to Make Sense of the Coming Revolution in Alternative Energy. Did you have to bone up on chemistry and global economics to figure out all this energy stuff?
Not exactly that. I certainly didn't bone up on chemistry. I think that's beyond my capabilities.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm certainly no expert in economics. And frankly, I want to make clear to listeners, I am not an expert on energy or renewable energy, despite having written this book. I know a lot about it, but I wrote the book. I mean, the short story here is that I was doing a lot of science writing.
Yes.
For A Moment of Science, for Sound Medicine, doing some other freelance stuff. And I just felt like, well, maybe I want to try writing a book on some kind of science topic. I wasn't sure what. I got in touch with a literary agent and pitched some ideas, and the first things that I sent out actually went nowhere.
Uh-huh.
So doing a book on renewable energy was actually a publisher's idea.
Oh.
And so I thought, okay, well, I don't know a ton about that, but I can educate myself. And so I started reading up about it, wrote a proposal, and then it's kind of a long story, but long story short, I did find a publisher who was willing to pay me sort of a pittance to write the book. It was a small amount of money, but they were going to publish it, St. Martin's Press.
Yeah.
And so I went about educating myself about renewable energy and what that is, how it works, why it's interesting, and ended up writing a whole book about it.
Following the release of that book, you gave a TEDx talk, a TEDx Bloomington talk about renewable energy.
Right.
You led that talk off. That was a 2014 talk. You led that talk off by talking about the 1889 Paris World's Fair.
That's right.
Where, and gosh, I didn't know this, they had a solar power generator there.
Right.
Did you know this before you started getting into this?
No, not at all.
Tell me
about it.
It
was all
that.
News to me. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's really fascinating. So the reason that that became the topic of that TEDx talk is because the book ended up being much more historical than I thought it might be. When I set out at first, I thought, well, I'm going to travel around the country, which I did, and meet scientists and go to renewable energy installations like solar farms, wind farms, geothermal plants. And I did all that stuff. And that's in the book, but the bulk of it ended up being more historical. And that wasn't the plan. But once I started digging into the histories of these technologies, which I felt I needed to do just to understand them, I realized that's what really interested me the most. much more so than the kind of day-to-day technical aspects, which are also fascinating and which also really matter.
But what's surprising is that they actually do have history.
Oh, yeah.
This is not all brand new stuff.
No, it's not at all. And in some ways it's surprising and in some ways it's not, right?
Yeah.
Like solar energy, people have been using the sun for power forever. It is the original source of any kind of energy. The sun is the source of all energy on the planet, right?
Right.
It makes plants grow and animals eat plants and then other animals eat animals, et cetera. Wind power, of course, goes way, way back. People have been using wind to power ships, you know, ever since ships with sails were invented. In any case, it was fascinating to learn the histories of these things, and that sort of became part of the point of the book, that you might look at a giant wind tower or a shiny solar panel and think, wow, well, this stuff is brand new, it's sort of futuristic.
Mm-hmm.
And my point is, well, no, it's actually been with us all along, and that it's really, you know, fossil fuel energy, which is much more recent.
Yeah.
If you look at sort of the grand scope of history. And that's not to denigrate fossil fuel energy. I mean, there are plenty of issues with it and, you know, emissions and global warming and such. But it's really powered the modern world. I mean, our world wouldn't be the way it is without the discovery of coal and oil and so on. In any case, though, in the one thing that was interesting to me is in the grand scheme of history, we've been using renewable resources much longer than fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're in a moment where there's renewed interest in renewable energy. And it looks a bit different, or it's on a larger scale, but it's really nothing new.
Maybe your forte for a long time was pen to paper or fingertips to keyboard.
Right, right. Yeah, that's right. After I got a PhD from IU in English Literature and Jewish Studies, that was 2005, then for about the next 10, maybe 15 years, I was a freelance writer primarily. But I also got into radio and audio. And so I taught myself how to record and edit. And I'm glad I did that because it sort of led me to a lot of the stuff that I'm doing today.
I feel like I'm interviewing myself because that's that sounds like my background.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. Writing and radio.
That's right. There you go. Well, I think that radio audio is a very writerly medium.
Yes.
It's a, you know, it really helps to be able to write.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot in podcasting, there's not much of it that's scripted necessarily, although there is some. It's a little more off the cuff, but it's a very it's a verbal medium, obviously, because it's audio. And I think talking and writing are related, obviously.
When you and Jennifer Richler, who's your co-host.
That's right.
When you're doing your podcast, you don't have a script.
No, we have an outline of what we want to talk about. When people hear us just kind of talking about the events, we're just sort of riffing on them. Really, that's what people seem to like most about the podcast, the interaction between me and Jen. You know, I just want to give a shout out to Jen. I mean, she is a fantastic co-host. She's just a total, she's very talented, and she's and a total natural at being on a podcast. She's really, really good at it. And the show wouldn't be nearly as good without her. So I feel very lucky that she signed on to do it. But yeah, it's us just sort of talking. We have an outline of what we want to talk about, and we write stuff down so we don't forget to at least mention it.
Yeah.
But it's us really kind of bantering.
You know, it's funny. You go to iTunes and you see under the comments, here are a couple of them. I copied them down.
Mm-hmm.
The hosts are funny and smart and very entertaining. That was one comment.
That's nice.
Another one, this sort of like is Ebert and Siskel-ish, thumbs up B-Town Lowdown.
We've gotten some good feedback. It's very nice. It's nice to get that feedback.
You have been quoted as saying that podcasts, the real successful ones, are more internationally oriented. And then you said that you wanted as a quote-unquote experiment to find out if a local podcast could be successful.
Right.
How can you gauge if your podcast is successful?
Well, I think there are a few ways. I mean, one, you do get some data on how many people are listening in a kind of crude way, but you at least get some sense from episode to episode, month to month, how many people are listening. So that gives you, you know, and if those numbers grow, then that's one sense that, okay, well, that people seem to like it. And word of mouth, and especially if you're doing something local, then I literally can hear from people on the street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's people that I already know who are friends who are listening, or increasingly people I've never met before who, when they see me at the farmer's market, you know, we go out there and promote the podcast, people stop by, and it's great to hear, especially when people say, hey, I've been listening to you guys, people we don't know, who have just kind of heard about it. That's one thing I like about doing something local. There's a lot that I like about it. On just the most practical level, I now know a lot more about what's going on in Bloomington, and I've been doing a lot more stuff. Yeah. My wife's really happy about that.
You're going out.
I'm going out. It's really inspired me to go out and sample the town, and that's also partly because I think to make the podcast better, I need to know what's going on, and I need to go do some of those things to be able to talk about them on the podcast and just really get to know Bloomington more. Even though I've lived here for many years, I'm learning new things about the place all the time. And it's also, I feel like the podcast is just adding value to the town. It's just helping people know more about what's going on. So just in a very practical way, I think it sort of serves a purpose, which is nice. And it's not the only way to get that information, but it's another way and hopefully a kind of fun way to get it. So it's also nice. Like, I feel like I'm doing something positive for the town.
You have been quoted as saying about Bloomington, the pace of living suits us here. You came here from where?
I grew up in the Detroit area.
Ah.
Yeah. To be clear, I didn't grow up in like inner city Detroit. I grew up in the suburbs.
Uh-huh.
But I grew up, so when I was a kid, we lived in a place called Southfield, right on 8 Mile. So if you know that Eminem movie, 8 Mile, So that's 8 Mile. So I'm essentially the same as Eminem is what I'm trying to say.
A musical star yourself, yes.
Yeah, no, I'm not. But then I went to school in Ann Arbor at University of Michigan, a college town, which is also a bigger, more populous city than Bloomington. But it has a similar kind of college town vibe to it. But Bloomington has turned out to be really great for me, for my family, for my kids. The pace of life does suit us. I really like it.
You mentioned that you got your advanced degree in English literature.
Yes.
Was that what you were studying as an undergrad?
Yep. I majored in English at Michigan.
So what book are you reading right now?
I'm always sort of dipping into a bunch of different books at a time. This is going to sound really pretentious, but I'm rereading some Herman Melville short stories.
Uh-huh.
Like Bartleby the Scrivener.
Yes.
Sort of a long short story. I just kind of picked it off the shelf. I'm like, I haven't read these in a while, like years and years. I think I've heard that he's pretty good, you know. Maybe I'll dip back in. So I've sort of just been, you know, reading some of those stories again.
And then you came here to study and get your advanced degree in English literature. Did you say Jewish studies as well?
Yeah, so I had my focus was on English literature with a PhD minor in Jewish studies.
And in Jewish studies, does that mean you're studying the entire history
of
Judaism?
No, I mean, I focused specifically on sort of 20th century Jewish American literature. So historically, I was sort of focused on, you know, more modern stuff, 20th century, but I did take classes and got exposed to the broad sweep of Jewish history.
So we're talking about Mordecai Richler and Philip Roth.
Yeah, absolutely.
That whole gang. I mean, I was 13 years old when Portnoy's Complaint came out.
Right.
And that just drew me in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a classic, right. By the way, my co-host Jen Richler, I believe is related to Mordecai Richler. I think so. And
there's so many connections here.
Yeah, Jen, I apologize, Jen, if I'm wrong, but I seem to remember her saying that. Maybe, like, I don't know how closely they're related, but I think they are, because Mordecai Richler is Canadian, and Jen's also from Canada.
Yeah, right. So, how did you get Jennifer to join this endeavor of yours?
When I had decided, okay, I'm going to do this, I thought, okay, well, I want a co-host because it'll be better. A lot of the podcasts that I like best have at least two people, sometimes three. It just makes it livelier.
Yes.
And it just seemed like it would be easier to do with somebody else sharing at least some of the prep work. And, you know, so I thought, well, who could that be? And as it just so happened, a few weeks prior to that, Jen had reached out to me to learn a little bit about audio stuff, because Jen is a freelance writer. But she just reached out to me. She wanted to learn about audio just to diversify her skills. She had an idea for a story that she wanted to pitch to some podcast. So we had gotten together just to talk about audio recording and the equipment you need and stuff like that. So I knew that she was interested in that. I knew that she is a big fan of podcasts generally. So she listens a lot. She gets the genre. I just thought, maybe she'd be interested in being on a podcast. And also, we're good friends. So I know we already have a rapport. And we just like hanging out. And I'm good friends with her husband, Noah. We play poker together. And so our our families are friends. So I thought, I'll see if Jen's into it. And I pitched her the idea. And she was into it. And I was, very pleased about that. And to say, okay, well, let's try it. Let's just see how it goes. And pretty much right away from our very first episode, when, neither of us exactly knew what we were doing or how it would go, I could just kind of tell right away, I made the right choice. Whatever happens with this podcast, Jen's the right person to do it. Because like I was saying before, she's very smart and very talented and also has a natural ability for that kind of thing. And I don't think she's ever done that before. I don't think she's ever been on a radio program. She's never hosted a podcast. She's just good at it. And we just have very good rapport together. Now we're 12 episodes in, or 11 episodes in. We're preparing the 12th episode. And it's really turned out to be a huge amount of work. Almost like it feels like a full-time job sometimes. I mean, I have a full-time job. I have a day job. I work at Cook. Mm-hmm. And so I do this just on the side, in my spare time.
So but it was more than you expected?
I guess so. I mean, I didn't really have any expectation that it would be hard or easy or anything, because I did have experience producing podcasts for other people. And for Sound Medicine, we didn't call it podcasts. Mm-hmm. But I was part of a team there, and I was just doing, my bit.
Yeah.
This is, it's me and Jen, or it's Jen.
It's all
Jen,
you and her.
Yeah, it's Jen and I, whichever. Yeah. I can never,
Either way, yeah, English literature, I don't know, do they address that kind of thing in that?
No. Anyway, when I set out to do it, I just knew, if I'm going to do this, I need it to be good. And by that, I mean the production quality has to be really high. I will not put it out there unless I feel like it really sounds good, like it's entertaining and engaging. And I hope that it is, but just using my own criteria and standards. But I know that to do that, it takes time and effort. You can't just throw it together. So it takes a lot of planning. It takes, really learning how to use the equipment, which I already knew how to use somewhat. But for what specifically for what we're doing, I had to learn some other things. It takes, getting in the studio and actually recording it and kind of figuring out how that works. I'd never done that before, working with somebody else to do that.
Are you disciplined? Do you have a specific time that you do certain things?
Yes. So, right. So we try to record the same time every week. And, sometimes things get in the way.
Sure.
But the only way this works, and to get something like this out on a weekly basis, you have to be at least somewhat disciplined.
Right.
Or else it just won't happen.
Right.
So recording it takes discipline. And then, of course, the other big part of it is promoting it. No one's going to listen if they don't know it exists.
So how do people find out about it other than listening to this show, for instance? How do I know about B-Town Lowdown?
Oh, well, I was kind of counting on this show as being my prime source of people knowing about it. I mean, we do everything that we can. So we're on social media, of course, primarily Facebook, but Twitter and a few other things.
Right.
So I try every day to post stuff and, develop and build a following on Facebook, which has actually worked quite well. And before this, I had a Facebook page, but I never used it. I didn't use it just for my – just kind of browsing. I didn't really like it, so I almost never posted anything on Facebook. So I had to learn a little bit about the ins and outs. Not that it's super hard, but there are some, best practices for doing that. So I had to kind of get in the habit of regularly – posting stuff on Facebook and hopefully getting people to follow the page, which seems to have worked at least a little bit. We do get people that engage on Facebook.
Sure.
So there's that. We have been out at the farmer's market, an information alley, I think is what they call it, alongside all the other folks with the tables and the stuff that they're talking about. So we've been out there before the podcast launch, for the past 3 months, pretty much every Saturday, talking to people And I found that that is probably the single best way to do it, just meeting people face to face. And we also record out there a little bit. So I'll bring a microphone out there and we'll get people just, you know, introducing themselves and maybe giving a shout out to their friends or saying what they like about Bloomington, or we'll record little segments there. And I found that's a great way to get people on the podcast, because I really like to feature as many Bloomington voices as possible in every episode, and getting them invested in the podcast. So that also is a good way to promote it. If someone has recorded and they're on there, well, they'll want to listen to that. And then ideally they'll want to tell their friends, like, hey, check it out, I'm in this podcast. And that helps spread the word. So I and it's also a lot of fun to meet people at the farmers market and other places. I've just found it's fun. I like meeting people. And that's been, I think, the single best way to get people signed up, to get them on our mailing list, and just to introduce them to what we're doing. You know, our model when we started it in many ways was Bloom Magazine. And I have a long history with Bloom. I wrote for Bloom for many years. And since I started working full-time, I just haven't had the time. But Bloom has been an amazing success story in this community. I mean, it's been around for how long now? I mean,
More than 10 years.
Yeah, 10. I think it's probably 12, maybe going on 13 years at this point. In any case, it's been, you know, a fantastic success, and it really adds a ton of value to our community. So when I started this, I thought, okay, well, that's a model. You can do that. You know, you can create a magazine that's successful in this town. And, you know, I remember when it started, Malcolm Abrams, who is, you know, the brains and the energy behind that whole thing. You know,
he is Bloom.
Yeah, and there are many other people who contribute and do a fantastic job. But, you know, Malcolm made it happen.
Right.
And there was, you know, skepticism when he started out. Sure. No, it's not going to work. Bloomington can't support something like that. And they were wrong. You know, Malcolm made that happen, and he's kept it going at a very high level. And that was an inspiration, frankly, for our podcast. You know, I thought, okay, if they can do it, well, it can be done. There wasn't a lot of podcast activity. There was some. My good friend, Jeremy Goodrich, he's one of the early podcasters in Bloomington. He has a podcast called Scratch Entrepreneur. When I started the B-Town Lowdown, one of the first things I did was to see, okay, well, who else is doing podcasting in Bloomington? And I found Jeremy doing Scratch Entrepreneur. I found there were several churches who were doing podcasts for their congregations. Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But there wasn't much. So I thought, okay, there's an opportunity here to do a local podcast for Bloomington. You know, the market's not already saturated. In fact, just the opposite. There's only a few people doing it. And Bloom has shown that if the quality is really good and you keep it up, then you can make something like that work.
Right.
So what I'm doing, I kind of like to think of it as it's sort of like an audio version of Bloom on a smaller scale, but it's the same kind of idea to showcase Bloomington in a really positive light, to, you know, tell Bloomington stories, to feature local people telling their stories, and to help people discover what's really cool and awesome about Bloomington. And there's lots to discover.
My guest this week has been Jeremy Scheer. He's the founder and the co-host of the B-Town Lowdown. He lets you know what's going on in this town. Jeremy, thanks for being on Big Talk.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.